Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Hardcore Listening Podcast.
Yes, welcome.
That voice you hear over there is my partner in crime, Christopher Glasson, and I'm Stuart Roy Whiffin.
I said a very welcoming your voice there. It was very
was
warm.
It?
Yeah.
Maybe I should do voiceovers.
No, it's a one-off, mate.
Okay. I like to think I've just peaked in the first two seconds.
That's it, yeah. Then you go monotone. If anyone's ever listened to this before, they're like, oh, I like his warm and rich voice.
Brilliant. That's how you keep listeners, Chris.
And then it's just, our drop-off rate's going to be quick. Anyway, let's pick it up by saying our guest this week is Blood Red Shoes, Stephen Ansell.
Sticks man.
Sticks on the sticks. And recorded it at the Hoxton Square Bar and Kitchen.
Thanks to those guys for letting us record there.
Yep.
I mean, this is some podcast, isn't it?
It's really, yeah. It's a bit rock and roll, this one, isn't it?
I'd say it's up there with Sanchez in regards to levels of rock and roll.
It is.
However, genuinely? Obviously, there is a shed load of really famous names in this podcast as well.
Stephen had to wear steel toe caps because he was name dropping left, right, and centre.
Man. I would be dropping them names like bombs if I had them stories in my back pocket. Because
some of these stories, like number one, makes me realise that my life's worthless and not worth living anymore because it's so crazy. It's so good, isn't it?
Yeah. What your life or his stories?
This story.
Yeah. It's a cracker, this one. And so I'll tell you what, I think we should just get on with the intro and let 76 drop the beat.
Drop that beat!
It's a drunken soiree in the Within. Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listening, the podcast.
We're rolling.
So, welcome to Hardcore Listening. We are back at the Hoxton Square Bar.
Yes. We've recorded here loads now.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, the Charlotte Hatherley podcast was recorded here, and that's available now. That would have been out by the time this one comes out.
Top five 80s sci-fi movies.
Yep.
I listened back to that.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, it was a good one. That was a good one.
What was their number one?
Well, in case people haven't listened
to it
yet.
Okay, let's not.
Better not. I'm trying to think what it is now myself. I'll whisper it out.
Dunstan checks in.
Of course. Makes sense.
Yeah.
It's buckle, isn't it? I listened back to it, and I get a bit carried away on that, Steve.
You fucking love sci-fi, don't you? When you see that top five coming, you got proper semi on about that.
I think I phoned you straight away. So have you seen it?
Well, the voice you just heard is today's guest, who very nicely has travelled down from Brighton.
Up, isn't it?
Yeah.
So good geography skills, though. Well done.
Thanks, man. Do you know what? I've just returned from. Where I got back from? I got back from
Scotland
yesterday. That's no, it's York.
So you've come down south.
But in the last 7 days,
did you come up from there?
I went Essex to the Lake District, to the Lake District to Inverness, from Inverness to John O'Groats, from John O'Groats to Orkney. I went to the furthest point, then come back, and then back.
What for? Are you on a run or?
No, I was on a holiday. I was on a bit of a road trip with a with my wife and children, and we wild swim. So we like to swim in rivers and locks. And
Stuart likes to wild swim.
That's pretty cool.
The kids just get dragged.
That is the cooler answer than I thought you were going to give, actually.
Yeah, so my youngest wanted to swim in Loch Ness, so we went to Loch Ness and swam.
That's really cool, actually. That's made me want
really
to do that.
Fucking cold, I can tell you that.
We went to introduce our guest there, and then we just got your life story.
Because straight away, you two just tag team slagged me off of my geography skills. So I felt like I had to kind of verify that I do know my way around a little bit. But yes, you've travelled up from Brighton, and today's guest is Stephen Amsel from Blood Red Shoes.
Hello.
You all right?
I'm good, yeah. Very well.
Good, good, good. We've literally met each other...
Zero times,
ago.
Yes, yeah. Until now.
Yeah. So we always try and start recording as quickly as possible, Stephen, because that way you get the sort of like the... It's quite genuine.
Yeah.
So it's quite...
I think that's a good call,
fun.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we said to you a minute ago, we will probably... We have this like little briefing with the guests when they get here where we say, like, is there anything you don't want to talk about? And no one's ever said
I think we should just stop asking people, because people always like, what do you think?
What I should have done was thought of one thing that's really weird that I've completely invented and just said
that would have put a spanner in the whole thing as well.
The whole time you'd be like, why can't I ask him about that? Yeah. Don't ask me about mushrooms. You know, why can I not ask this guy about mushrooms? Like, what happens with a mushroom?
And so we said, we very nearly went down that conversation of what you suggested for your other five, said you're not gone for...
Yeah.
What you've chosen. Can you think of any? You said you started telling us, we was like, hang on, save it till we start recording.
Yeah, what I did was, when we talked about doing this, I spoke to Laura, and then Laura is in the US right now, so she's like, well, I can't do it, so you do it, so you think of something. And I was like, right, because it doesn't have to be the band, it could be anything.
Yeah.
So I sat around my friends and was like, right, and they were all like, top five cheeses, or like, top five, yeah, movies came up a lot, everyone's like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like, yeah, top five... actors in action movies, or loads and loads of stuff that came out, and I went through all these ones, and at the end I was like, I am in a band though, aren't I, and I'm kind of here because I'm in a band. Why don't I talk about that?
And then
I went back to Laura and was like, I think I should talk about something to the band, but what's top five that's actually interesting, like? And she was like, why don't you do the gigs that we remember the most, because they're not the best ones. They're the ones where something mental happens.
It's a great shout, mate.
So your top five.
So my top five is our top five most eventful gigs.
Fantastic. We had a comedian called Brett Goldstein come on and do his most memorable stand-ups.
Right.
And again, much like yours, it's not, oh God, I was amazing on this night.
And this joke killed.
The weirdest.
Yeah.
Oddest,
yeah, that's it. Like, some of the gigs in this are like, they were cool shows, but it's the things that happen around it that made it.
Okay.
Oh,
so
you must
memorable.
Have that, because you guys, you tour and you gig extensively, don't you? You play a lot.
Yeah. We played well over 1,000 shows.
Yeah.
And I probably remember only these five. Yeah. So it's lucky, really. we've done a lot of mileage.
Okay. Nice. Well, should we just jump straight
go
in?
Go on then, let's have
So have you decided to put these in order or not?
Yeah,
Steve?
Just about 3 seconds ago. So number five is, I think this is about 2006.
Right.
And we played a feminist festival in Brighton called Lady Fest Brighton.
Yep.
Which, you know, I was allowed in on the basis of being 50% of the band, but predominantly it's an arts festival, you know, aimed at supporting women in music and other arts. We played the closing night, so it's over a weekend, where they just wanted to have a massive piss up at the end from like the organisers and the kind of bit more of the like the insiders. We played the closing night in a basement lesbian bar in Brighton where it was only DJs, and the only reason they could get us is because there's only two of us, so they could fit us in this tiny. You could probably fit 50 people tops.
That's like everyone basically.
So it was really hard to get into because it's a bit, you know, there's thousands of people at this thing. And it's been going all weekend. They've had all these American bands over and all these people. It's been a really great event. And at the end, we can play. So we set up in this ramshackle stage where our heads are basically touching the ceiling. And it's just like, it's just DJs and then us. And
So was your mic'd up, the kit, or was it just...
The kit was, and there are two vocal mics, and we were already about 8 times louder than the DJ.
Even your kit would have been
thunderous. Yeah, it was crazy. It was so loud. Which I think is part of what happens.
So to explain to anyone that isn't familiar with Blood Red Shoes,
we are a two-piece rock and roll band, and we're not known for being mellow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's loud, raucous, rock and roll.
Yeah.
We both play really loud. Laura likes to put in as many amps as possible and turn it up. I always joke that she doesn't really understand. There are settings on an amp that aren't everything up full, but yeah. I don't think she understands.
Spinal tap,
she's that bad. Just because she's a woman, no, she's any different. She's probably worse. So we set up. So there's DJs. Everyone's getting smashed. It's like 2 a.m. We come on play, and we are 1,000% louder than anything a DJ's done, even without anything going on. So immediately everyone's like, whoa. Then we decided, because it's a feminist festival, we should do a cover. So we learned Walk Like an Egyptian.
Okay.
Nice.
By the Bangles.
Yeah.
Right? Good job. Seemed totally appropriate.
So.
Great choice, though.
We were talking about top, great bands, totally appropriate
for the theme of the festival. Also, dead easy song because it's only two chords, so it didn't take so long. Had to try and remember a lot of lyrics in that song.
There is. Quite fast delivery.
It was quite hard work. We were both like, shit. So anyway, we started playing it, and it took a little bit for everyone to figure. Most of our songs at this point, like, no one really knew. We were just this really loud thing that had happened, and everyone was like, holy shit. We get to do this song. As soon as people start twigging that it's the Bangles, woman just takes her top off.
Okay.
At the front.
Yeah.
Someone else takes their top off. Whoa. Then another woman takes her top off.
Yeah.
And very quickly, we're playing to a room full of topless lesbian feminists.
Did you take your top off?
I already had my top off because it was so goddamn hot in there. Yeah. Then suddenly the power goes. We haven't even finished the song. So this is in the space of like 2 minutes tops. Everyone starts, tops being the right word.
Yeah.
Everyone's got topless. Then everything's dead and everyone's screaming, what's going on? Manager runs in, goes ape shit. She's like, you can't actually, I didn't know this, but you can't be topless in a bar unless the bar has a sex license or like a dancer's license.
Right, okay.
As a woman, you can't be topless. Yeah. As a man, you can. Well, it's a feminist festival. So immediately they're like, well, why can men be topless and women can't?
Yeah.
Everything kicks off. One of these topless ladies punches the manager, who's also a woman, in the fucking face.
Whoa.
And then she's like, this has got nothing to do with whether we can get tits. I'll get my tits out too. Pulls her top off. And then they just
This is the manager now fighting
with one of the people. Bear in mind, this whole thing's small. So it's like an American movie where there's a bar brawl. Everyone's knocking into everyone. We're on the stage like, what is going on? We just went in to play the
Literally
Bangles.
Just boobs everywhere.
Just boobs and fighting, right?
Then great eventually... Name, great name for an album.
They get, someone calls the police. Everything gets stopped. The power gets... Everyone gets thrown out. The police come and take statements. It's mental. It's totally mental. And that was the end of the night. That was the closing party. Total disaster because Blood Red Shoes decided to do a Bangles cover.
Did you find out what the connection is between the Bangles and...
I think it was that everyone was hammered and it was the only song they actually knew. Yeah. And they were just excited.
Just got caught up in it.
You see footage of like, I don't know, like giant rock bands at festivals. Yeah. There's always someone on someone's shoulders with their top on.
Yeah.
It's just like a, I'm losing my mind, this is great kind of gesture.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of went
It just
that
caught
way.
On. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. These things must happen, Stu. These things must happen.
They do.
I've been
DJing for 24 years and I've never, ever got that response to
No, you can't.
No, and we've done outdoor stages at rock festivals where everyone's on each other's shoulders and no one's done it. But in a tiny basement bar.
Continue just like that now. Just looking from side to side.
Maybe because we haven't done that cover again.
That's what it is. It's just the power of that song. Shoot, you just get asked to turn it down, don't you?
That was the last request I got.
I've been physically assaulted as a DJ at a venue. I say that like it was an awful thing. I was being punched in the stomach repeatedly because I didn't have the name of an obscure Irish band that someone came and asked for. And it was the second time they'd come and asked me. And it was really early. It was like 8 p.m.
Oh, shit.
And they were like, don't you know any bands? And I was like, I just don't know all bands ever.
Yeah.
And then they were like, give me a sip of your drink.
Oh, no, that's
I was like, it's cool. and then she just proceeded to start punching me in the stomach, and a friend came over and was watching, and I was watching her punch me, and I was looking at her friend, I was like, do you think you can get him to stop?
Maybe like intervene?
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was funny though. But Steve, I tell you what, if that's your number five, dude. I can't
that's
believe
what I've
that.
Decided
wow.
for number five.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What a starter.
Yeah, maybe I've done it wrong order.
No, it's amazing.
So, you grew up in Brighton, right?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what did you sort of study there and get in a, like, did the whole kind
I
of
I grew up in a
stuff.
Suburb called Horsham,
yep.
which is this little small, the kind of place where you grow up saying, I want to be in a rock and roll band. And everyone goes,
yeah.
What about like insurance or something?
Yeah.
So Brighton was the nearest town that you moved to when you want to start rock. So I just did that. Bunch of mates, 18, got the hell out of Horsham, moved to Brighton, played in a bunch of bands till I ended up meeting Laura. And then that was the connection that suddenly changed, well, literally changed my life.
Did you know, like, so you come out of some other bands, like the pair of you, and then so when you first had a little mess around and a jack, was you like, oh, hold on, this, that?
Yeah, immediately.
Was you aware of, like, at Laura's band that she was in prior to?
Yeah, so she knew my old band, my old punk band. I knew her old punk band. We never really chatted or hung out much, but, like, that little punk scene's very small on the South Coast, so it's quite easy to find each other.
Yeah. The punk scene. So, what sort of punk are we sort of talking about? You know, in that. So, we're going back to what early to mid 2000s.
Early.
So, what sort of stuff was on your stereo then?
Like a lot of Fugazi,
nice.
And Bikini Kill, and a lot of the kind of American underground bands that were coming over around that time. Like, there's one Q and Not You that we were huge fans of because they were like punk that you could dance to. Mm. For us, the dancing element was always important.
Mm.
And a lot of the kind of, I mean, it was after the Riot Girl era, but a lot of the bands that came out, like where the Gossips started before they became a pop phenomenon, was in that scene, that kind of thing. Yeah, so we were all around those. We were the kind of bands that get a call to support them when they came over from America. And so we knew each other from that sort of world.
That was such an exciting scene when that first come over. Cause
it was.
I'm well old, so when
you are old
in the early 90s, when that first dropped, and the Melody Maker and the NMA, like jumped all over it and just really pushed, like, mainly Bikini Kill.
And
what was the other one? Oh, God, I can't remember what they were called.
Huggy Bear with
Huggy
the
Bear,
sort
of
Brighton,
Bear. Yeah.
Brighton-based equivalent, I guess you call it.
Huggy Bear. Yeah. And, but, yeah, like, it was just brilliant because it was just... And at the time, I think, like, Polly Harvey was being sort of shouted around that time as well. She come through and it was fucking. It was a great time, like for
exciting. She's probably one of our bands,
noisy.
Like all time joint heroes. PJ Harvey,
she's
big inspiration to us from the very beginning and still.
Yeah, she's pretty special.
Did you and Laura know what sort of music you were going to start writing straight away?
No, we didn't have a clue. No. Also, I played guitar in my last band. And I just got really bored of it.
Right.
So what happened was Laura found my email off my band's site and was like, we'd broken up and we'd put on our, this isn't even MySpace, it's before that.
Yeah.
Jeez.
It was on our like GeoCities or something. But like, are we broken up? The first thing that happens is she emails. To me, that was like the end of my life. It was I'm heartbroken. My band's broken up.
Yeah.
She emails me.
The
fucking
dream's gone.
Why don't we have a jam then?
Yeah.
So she's thinking I'm going to play guitar. She comes to Brighton because we've got this rehearsal space. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not a guitar player anymore. I'm going to learn drums. And she's like, have you played drums before? I was like, no, it'll be fine.
Wow.
So we had no idea what we were going to make because I had no idea what I was doing. So we just figured it out. We just thought we'd just play. But literally immediately, like, we started playing, we wrote our first song that was the first thing we released in that first session.
But did you?
It just something
that's
just
crazy.
Connected.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's like the musical equivalent of Love at First Sight. It just worked.
Yeah.
We're completely opposite people in every single way, in our personalities, in our whole attitudes to most things in life.
Yeah.
We're really different.
Yeah.
But musically, there's just something that connects that is undeniable. It's really weird.
So before you sort of plugged in and started making any racket together. Mm-hmm. Had you had that kind of right? So yeah, we get a guitarist and we get this, or did you just think no, we're gonna?
We said we'd have a jam, and obviously we knew we'd come from being into similar kind of music. Yeah. Mm. So you know, there were like there's parameters to what we're doing. It wasn't just like anything, but we just started playing, and then it went really well. We had this at least one song. We were like, well, this is kind of fun. We should figure out some people to join, you know. We were like, maybe get a keyboard player instead of a guitar player. That'd be kind of interesting. And get a bass player or, you know, just figure it out. And then we just sort of didn't. There was no decision. It doesn't feel like a decision to be a two-piece. It feels like we got together again. And we're like, oh, we'll jam some more and then we'll figure that out. We'll jam some more and figure that out. And then, oh, we'll just play this gig and maybe we'll meet some people there and they'll join. And we'll just figure it out. Oh, we'll just play another gig and then we'll just figure that out. And then it was like...
We don't need it.
It's been 14 years and we haven't done it.
That's great.
You're a whiz on the keyboard, mate. You're 14 years so far, Stephen, but you don't know.
Steve, well, that actually...
Yeah, I deliver
the next record
the,
we're going to have a band for.
Oh, really?
We're going to need to, yeah.
Okay.
But that's another time.
Yeah. Okay, sounds interesting.
Should we do a number four?
Let's do it.
Right, number four is Munich. So, there's a phenomenon that me and Laura refer to as tour psychosis, which is when you've been away for like 2 or 3 months, you don't get much sleep, you have zero personal space for a long time, which is weird. You're in a different place every day. It's very easy to get disconnected and lose your marbles. So, there's a point of tour where it kicks in for people at different times.
And I guess you haven't got that thing that a lot of bands have, where if there's 5 or 6 of you in the band, you can fuck off with another person it's just you two.
Oh, yeah, it's super amplified in our band. Yeah. There's no other person. Like, you get to a point where you're like, she's chewing those cornflakes really loud just to piss me off. It's deliberately aimed at me and no one else. That's why she's doing it. You know, it's completely mental.
Yeah.
And you know it is in retrospect, but at the time, you're convinced. It's like literal insanity. And we've got the hang of it now and we know it happens and you just got to start to, like, you know, just ride it out a bit. Give each other some space. With a two-piece.
Sit at the different opposing ends of the tour bus or whatever.
Yeah, just like, I'm going for a walk now. But yeah, with a two-piece, it is really different. You know, we've both been in bands with more people and it is, that energy's kind of diffused more and spread out. But with two people, it's just like, intense is a polite word. So we get to the show. We've been arguing all day about anything, literally anything you can pick a fight about. We'd pick a fight about all day. Get to the show in Munich. It's about a 300 size venue. I think this is about 2008 or 9 on our first album. And it's a place called the Atomic Cafe, right? Which is a pretty cool venue. It's sold out, 300 people. Pretty cool.
Cool.
We are, till the moment we go on stage, like staring at each other like, I hate you. I want you to die. Why am I here? You know, all the worst heightened emotions of all time. You're walking on stage like seething before you've even done anything. So we get on stage. We get about 2.5 songs in and literally we're staring at each other. Must have looked quite cool, but we're staring at each other.
Yeah, it would have looked probably intense. People are like, what's
you? Hitting the drums as hard as they can. Laura's playing something. There's one bit where it was in, what song was it? A song called Say Something, Say Anything, right? I think we played it about third. And Laura misses a guitar thing. She's turned around. She's got her back to me at this point. Won't even look at me. She just misses a guitar thing. And I was like, well, if you don't want to fucking play it, don't fucking play it then. On the mic. She turns round, looks at me, takes the guitar over her head and throws it straight into my face. Some idiot German dude at the front goes, why aren't you fucking smiling? And Laura just grabs the mic and stares straight into the guy's face and goes, fuck you, cunt! And walks off. And then I'm like, okay, I'm bleeding. I'm like, I'm just going to sheepishly walk off after that. Then.
Wow, that is one exit.
Fuck.
And that was it. We did, I think, 3, I don't know if it's 2.5 or 3.5 songs.
You should have fucking launched into Walk Like an Egyptian just to say yes.
You don't know the reaction in Munich. You might, might have had their trousers off. You're like, whoa.
Yeah, you never know.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Oh, wow.
That person probably still dines out on that story.
Remember that time? Like, literally just screamed.
She just switched on me.
All I said was just smile, because that's always a guarantee.
They always tell when someone's upset, who's in a bad mood, why don't you just give us a smile? Yeah, that's going to work. Well done, dude.
Yeah. I mean, respect. I like the fact that you just had it out then and there on stage, crowd, and you're like, no, that's it. I can't let this.
The great thing was,
eat my guitar.
That's all we needed. Because within an hour tops, we were in a bar laughing our asses off, going to best of friends again. Yeah. Like,
I think that's the key to successful, you know, friendships is when you're able to just sort of, you know, get it out there, and not let things like gestate.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. Totally, that's everything I've learned in this band is that we embrace that stuff. We try not to get it quite that extreme.
But because there's only
we
so
just
many.
Get it out because we know it's like when you argue with your family. It's like you know they'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah,
and we've lasted so long now that we know.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
going to break out the bands. Yeah. We know yeah. we'll be here tomorrow. So yeah, you just yeah. get it out. Get it done with. Move
well,
on.
Well, if you've had a guitar launched at your head and you was cool with that, then yeah, that's a test. That's a
I
test.
I think
yeah.
I'd be more fucked wasn't up it, with the cornflakes. That would... I can't stand hearing people
the
eat
little
that.
Things,
like,
the little things, yeah. And here's the great coda to this story is, so next time we come to Munich, right, apparently not one single person asked for a refund, which we thought was a surprise. Next time we played Munich, we sold out a venue double the size in one day.
Yeah, that's morbid fascination.
Everyone was like, what are they going to do next?
Yeah, of course.
That's like rubbernecking.
And we played this venue, and afterwards, the guys from the Atomic Cafe, the original, the one, invited us for an after show, gave us free cocktails, showed us in the office. They apparently there was a newspaper, a local paper, to review it. They've got the review up on their wall, and they were like, "It's one of the coolest things that's ever happened here." They love
really?
It. Yeah. And every time it's we play, they're like, "Come back, have free cocktails at the bar. We love you guys. Brilliant."
Amazing.
They're like proud of it.
Literally, drink as much as you want.
Yes.
Drink
Let's
as much
we
as
can
you
do
want.
We got a guy out there that's got something to say.
Oh, no. I think Laura said something then. Yeah, about you.
Oh, that's
what?
Brilliant.
No, don't worry. That's good.
Okay. So, should we just steam straight on?
Should we do a three? Yeah, let's yeah, go it. On then. Let's sure let's thing. Catch further on.
Number three is in summer 2010, Tokyo.
Right.
Festival called Summer Sonic Festival, which is great. And this is one of the ones that simultaneously... No, I was going to say simultaneously good and bad. It's all good.
Ah, cool.
So
Tokyo's a good place anyway, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. And we had this blip, which lasted for our first two records, where Japan was like huge for us, like crazy. Like, get recognized in the street. Like, I always joked, it was
really?
Like being John Lennon for a couple of years. It was mad. Didn't last, and everyone told us it wouldn't last, and they were right,
yeah.
which
yeah.
is a shame.
Yeah,
but,
Just enjoy it.
There was 2 years, yeah. It was mental.
Yeah.
We had one of our records went to number three. And we're like, what? It was like the same, I think number four was the reissue of Thriller or something. And it was like, what?
Yeah.
Taking nothing away from your music, why do you think that it was embraced so much there?
I have no idea. I know, right, people in the music industry tell me stuff, but I don't always think they know what they're talking about.
Right. Yeah.
They said, firstly, and I think this is true about our band, is the way we sing. One thing our band's always had is we've always had a lot of fans from a lot of different countries and a lot of places where they don't speak the language. And I think there's something in the way we use melodies and sing that even if you don't know what the words are,
yeah.
you can connect to it. In
yeah,
a way
definitely.
For some people, it's very English and it yeah. stays in mm-hmm. England. Somehow, the way we do it, it translates. But also, according to a lot of people, like our label we had in Japan and everything, we're like, it's just the look. It's like a young woman and a young man. One's a brunette, one's a blonde. And it's had quite an excited kind of childlike sound, our
yeah.
early stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
they were like, that works really well in Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, once we deviated from that and tried to, we kind of got heavier and a bit darker and a bit broodier. They were like,
bit.
It's not going to work
yeah,
so well.
Yeah,
and they
yeah.
were dead right.
Yeah.
Other countries liked it a lot more at that
yeah.
point, actually. But that's what I'm told.
What do?
I don't really know.
Yeah. Because it is very upbeat and you dance
yeah,
to it. I mean,
especially
like Blood Red Shoes, the name
yeah.
of it, where you get that from, sort of like, what
yeah.
was it? Is it Fred Astaire and that? Or
correct.
Yeah, so is that what you was thinking when you got to that point to name your band? Was you like, this is the sort of the music we want to write?
Most things we do are not thought about at all.
It was just like
we went through about a thousand names. Laura really wanted to call us the Flesh Eating Mothers, right? Because she really likes
yeah.
gory horror films.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah. Well, if she wants to do a top five gory horror films, she knows where to come.
Yeah, she'd
yeah.
do that.
Yeah.
And we went through loads of stuff and we remembered, well, okay, firstly, when we first met, we were both wearing red shoes, which
yeah.
then, since naming the band, we've never done since, because that would be really lame.
Sure.
But we went through all these ideas and one of them, we were like, oh, we're both wearing red shoes, is there something about that? And then Laura had been reading this book called Hollywood Babylon,
mm-hmm.
which has all these kind of classical, old school Hollywood behind the scenes, like all these great movies, actually that person was strung out the whole time.
Yeah.
All that sort of real like 40s, 50s, the dirt behind the glamour
yeah.
kind
yeah.
of thing. One of them was the story of, I forget which movie, and I should know really because we named our band after it, but yeah, so basically Fred Astaire's made Ginger Rogers redo this scene so many times and one of the camera guys goes, well, you're wearing the wrong shoes, what are you doing? Because your shoes aren't white
yeah.
and they were red because she bled.
Yeah.
She'd been reading the scene so many times.
Bloody
and
hell,
we were
yeah.
like, blood, cool. red shoes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in that moment, we stuck with it, not knowing that it'd still be there 14 years later.
Yeah. Super.
And you're happy because sometimes we hear bands and they're sort of like, they say to us, oh, I don't want that name now. But that's still cool. Yeah, yeah, it's still got a ring to it. Yeah,
yeah, I'm happy with that. Yeah.
Great, lucky, greatest band very names lucky. Ever. What do you reckon? Who are you throwing in now?
I'm not a massive fan.
That's a great name Foo and Fighters, a great band. I'm not a massive fan of the band, but I do think the Manic Street Preachers is a good name for a band.
Yeah, that's right. Queens of Stone Age, I
totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a huge fan of the band, but great name.
That's a great name, isn't it? Yeah.
That is actually a great name.
You've never been a huge fan of Queens of Stone Age, have
don't
you?
Don't like them.
Otherwise,
it is quite a cool name, though.
It is a good name. Yeah, I like it. I think it's cool.
Not as good as Eagles of Death Metal.
No, that is fucking amazing.
That's just a stupid name. But it fits. It's a tongue-in-cheek band.
Absolutely. All right, so we're going back to...
So, Tokyo.
Oh, yes.
Let me just pull up my notes. Right, so here's... Initially, we were like, this is going to be... We're playing our biggest festival set we've ever had, right? Biggest stage at a really big festival. We got a really good slot because Japan's kicking off and we've become super famous and it's a big deal. So we're both flying out. Both of us have managed to get everyone to pay for all our family. We've got our mums and dads and everyone on, getting on the flight. So we're gonna, it's like, I'm gonna show off to the parents.
Yeah.
Everyone's coming in. So we get a connecting flight, it's delayed, missed the flight. So right off the bat, we're like, shit.
Omen.
In the end, we get into the festival about an hour before we got to play. We haven't done our sound check. We were supposed to land the night before and have a sound check. It's a big city, it's a 15,000 capacity. Like, it's actually indoors. We're supposed to have a sound check and check everything. We get in that. So you fly there, you're jet lagged, you've got about an hour. You get straight from the airport, didn't even go to the hotel, went straight to the venue, right? Obviously, most of the equipment you rent, you don't fly over a drum kit and everything. So I get shown, was like, here's your kit. It's a pink, sparkly kit, and it's the wrong size. So I'm like, right, not really a pink, sparkly guy, but, you know, we'll handle that. Laura's giving the guitar amp's wrong. Everything's just out of whack. We don't know what's going on.
Probably.
Yeah, everything, yeah, probably, yeah.
So we get festival, you don't even get a line check or anything
like that? We should have. Well, the night before, we would have had a full sound check for hours. Yeah. But because the flight was delayed, you can't do anything about that.
Yeah. Sound check.
You can't get to Japan any faster than the plane. Yeah. So you're stuck. You know, in retrospect, we should have flown in 2 days early.
So are
not
you
one.
Literally, like, I guess, can the stage crew go on and line check before you go on quickly? Or are you going on totally blind?
We had a couple of guys with us. So.
Yeah.
They throw all the stuff up on the stage. All the wrong drum kit that's pink and sparkly, very Japanese and not very Stephen Ansell. And they put all the stuff roughly where it's supposed to be, check all the mics, and they're like, right, you go on now. And we're like, okay. We're really, really dazed and confused.
Yeah.
Walk out, and it is wall-to-wall rammed. And we look at each other like, shit, are not ready.
Oh,
we
God.
Start with Boring by the Sea.
Yeah.
Laura plays the first note, and he goes, da, 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 da. The entire room sings the riff back and starts pogoing. Before I've even hit a drum and kicked in, everyone just goes, da, 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 and it was like a dream show. It was
and
the
it
time
just went, it just,
of our
yeah.
life. We were just like,
no,
wow,
no
they
issues
really
with
love
the
us.
And they loved you.
Any issues as did, they just evaporated because it mattered because the atmosphere, like a switch, was just, it was like, I'm a fucking star. It's happening.
That must be fucking surreal.
It's brilliant.
I mean, like was you getting any anxiety before that? Are you okay with that sort of stuff? Does it not get on you?
I mean, I tend to be the overconfident one. Laura's the one who's worried. Okay. Like I said, we're complete opposites. So I'm usually like, we'll be fine. We'll just get up and rock out and be fine. And Laura's like, holy shit, everything's wrong. Mm. But this is one of those occasions I was like,
no, you're right.
We're going to bomb, man. It's a lot of pressure. And we brought our family. You know, I'm like, I want to impress my mum.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah, cool.
All that. So it was amazing. And then this is another great thing. So at this festival backstage, the catering is shared by everybody. And a lot of festivals, all the really big acts have separate stuff.
Sure.
And they're not. Backstage, I figured out this thing with like, they don't have much cheese in Japan. It's not a dairy culture. But I figured out the only cheese they got, I was figuring out how to make a cheese toasty. So I was getting this bread after we played. This is my celebration. I was drinking red wine and making cheese toasties. Wedging it all together and shoving it into a toaster to make a cheese toaster. This voice next to me is like, how are you making those grilled cheese? And I was like, is that? It's Taylor Swift. And I met Taylor Swift and I showed her how to make a cheese toasty.
In a toaster.
Amazing. In a toaster in Tokyo. After this show. Then the other great thing was, also met Slash, because he did a Slash solo set, and he was amazing. Yeah. And I just went over to him. This is one of Laura's all-time heroes. She's a huge Guns N' Roses fan. And I just walked over to him in the backstage. I was like, I'm having such a good day.
Yeah.
We've just had a buzzing set. Everything is brilliant. Everything is brilliant.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just going to go and hang out with Slash.
Yeah.
And he's the nicest guy ever, and hung out with Slash. Exactly. I've got evils across the room from Laura because she was like, you're talking to my hero.
Yeah. Did she not come over?
She didn't. She's too shy.
She's too shy for it.
She's quite
is it too big? It was too big a star.
It's too
as
much.
Well. Yeah.
Too much.
Too close to the thing you love, right?
And then when he left, he knocked on our dressing room door and he was like, came in and said goodbye. And Laura was like, I'm never going to forgive you for that.
That's amazing. That's a good day, isn't it?
So this is a good day in the office.
Nothing's going to go wrong. You were just on that roll. You was doubling down.
Yeah, it was that.
I want to go and hang out with Slash. I'm going to go and kiss Slash. Go watch this. This is not going to go wrong.
He just knocked on the door. Was like, I did not expect that. He must have everyone come up to him all the time.
Yeah.
He knocked on the door and was like, hey, man, we're shooting off. Good to meet you, bro. Kind of thing. I was like,
what a day.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, what a day.
That was an eventful show because it went from the, like, we're never even going to make it to, like, everything worked out and everything was great.
And it was a close scrape as well. So you had that. Like,
you had a little bit of panic at the start.
Have you ever had 15,000 fans singing your songs in Serious Problems, Joe?
Never.
Have you got what gig would be yours to remember?
You need to write a one note riff like that, and then you got it. Very simple.
It's a banger. That's the first tune
translates
I heard of you, though. First song I heard of you, which I get for some.
People love that song.
Yeah, it's
we don't play it anymore because we got bored of it.
But yeah, no doubt. Because you will. Like people, I think you probably do get a little bit like, oh God, everyone wants that song, but I really don't want to play it now.
We will at some point.
Yeah.
In fact, funnily enough, here's a nice little circle we've come in the conversation. Yeah. That song was about the fact that all that punk scene we were talking about at the start, we showed up in that punk scene and we weren't punk enough.
Yeah, right.
Which is the hilarious thing about punk music is actually there's a lot of rules.
Yeah.
And that song's about exactly that. We were like, we like that scene, but we want to make something people can dance to.
We literally
were like, I just want people to bounce around.
Yeah.
I used to loop it. That was uncool
in the punk scene.
I used to loop like the bars off that to mix it into other things. I had this idea, and actually a band that we're seeing later, we've got a Subways later.
Oh yeah.
And one of their tunes, I used to do the same thing because it just worked. It worked like a dance record. Mm-hmm.
It was what it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Just with noisy guitars.
It did work. It was great. Serious Problem, Stuart. What was your most memorable thing on stage or off stage?
So it was a weird one. I've probably mentioned you before. We was managed by Ricky Gervais. And he just started managing Suede as well, and this was kind of pre-TV and stuff like that. And he was the Ents manager at Yulu. He was like, he used to book the bands.
He?
Yeah, and we was like kind of a bit Beastie Boys, but kind of a bit more offensive, and. like kind of early Beasties, like, and it was a bit kind of in your face, and it was very punk.
That sounds great.
But we would try and. But it was a weird setup. There was nine of us. There was like a
It's like the Wu-Tang Clan.
It was like the UK or the World DMC Scratch Champion was doing scratching, and there was like it was a weird one. The guitarist ended up in a Prodigy, and it was a weird mashup of stuff.
That sounds pretty cool.
But it was catastrophic. But Ricky really liked it, and he was like, "Look, we've got you this. We need to get you a gig next week because I've got some labels that want to come and see you." And at the time, there was a label, I'm sure it was called Gut Records, and I think Space was signed to it. And I can't think. Tom Jones, when he done his covers album with Sex Bomb all of that stuff, that come out on Gut Records. Right. I can't remember.
So it's pretty cool label.
Not so much. But we didn't know anything about record labels. We just wanted to get signed.
Yeah, it was
like,
exciting.
You know, mid-90s. And so we played the Standard in Walthamstow because we couldn't find any venues. We had to book it and play it the next week. And so at the time, you had the Camden Falcon, and you know, which became a Barfly, and all of these venues, Dublin Castle. It was just like, we can't get you in for like another 6 weeks. So it was like, right, we've got to play the Standard in Walthamstow. And so we didn't have to take buses of people up to gigs like you do when you start out and all of that nonsense. But we didn't do anything. And he said, there's another four bands. He said, so Ricky was like, look, when they're locked, turn up to watch you, which is an awful thing to do because as a promoter, I've seen the wrong side of it.
Yeah.
And in a band, we've all done it. He's like, we'll play to their followers. And all three bands pulled out within like 2 days of the show. So it was just us and no one else. And what we used to do was wait for someone to have a dig at us in the crowd and say something. And then Which was inevitable. And it was like kind of comedy-based. Yes, and yeah, we'd let them have it as well.
So that's quite crucial to the whole thing.
Completely key to it. However, the only people at the show was the two guys from the record label and Ricky. And I was like, Rick, fucking...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
What are we going to do? Like, I can't have a go at him. He went, I'll just fucking let him have it. And I was like, really? He went, yeah. And like, literally, we finished the first song. They didn't even clap. They just looked at us. And I can't even remember what was wrong with the guy. It would have been the most obviously noticeable defect about what his shoes were or anything.
Poor son. Defect.
And like, whatever was
wrong. Quiffy.
With his, no, it would have been something as lame as like his shoes or like his jacket. And nine of us just ripped into these in two poor bastards
that you wanted a contract
that come to see us with the best of intentions that might have been our only chance of ever getting a record deal. Within about two songs, they were like, fuck this. We were just giving them so much shit. So I guess that's kind of punk in some roundabouts way.
Yeah, it is.
But
that is definitely punk.
We completely...
And also, I feel like the right kind of person would have been like, this band's great.
I agree.
See, if I was running a label, I'd be like, yeah, I want that.
These guys give
they
zero
do not
fucks.
Give a fuck.
They might be hard to manage, but
it's a shame Ricky didn't have his bank balance. He's probably got there then. Could have done it himself.
He's probably thought back to those days, mate, with that bank balance and been like, nah, fuck that.
I think he made a good decision.
All right, so which one's next, Dave?
Are we on two?
We're in number two,
yeah,
which is New York.
Nice. Okay.
Same year, 2010.
That's a glamorous life you've led, mate.
On a roll.
Or is it? It might be 2011 or 12. Actually, I'm not sure about that. I didn't look it up. So we went out to play CMJ, which is a music industry conference type, sort of South by Southwest thing.
Is that showcasey. Like Mydem, that sort of thing.
Maybe. Mm. I've never been to that, but it's a New York style South by Southwest. They use everything they can as a venue. You play loads of times. It's all labels and publicists, and it's supposed to be good for business in inverted commas.
Backslap.
And all that. Which we've never really, well, you'll find out why we've never done it since, but we definitely had never really done it at that point. We've always just been like, look, we play to people. I want to play to people. I don't really care too much about trying to please the people in between me and the audience. I'd rather just play to other humans. Sure. And if those people want to come with us, they can. If they don't, fuck them.
Yeah.
This one time, we were going to do a whole tour. And we got some funding to do like a showcase thing. So managers are like, it'd be really useful. We could try and set you up with some American labels, which we didn't have at that point.
Yeah.
All the rest of it. So we played Le Poisson Rouge, which is a venue in Manhattan. And basically, it was pretty cool, actually. It was like, downtown New York. Decent venue, decent sound system. Everything was going pretty cool. We sound checked. They had all like, it was sponsored by Sennheiser. So they had all... Like, super expensive, brand new, top of the range, everything. And we just got like in-ear monitors, which are a risk, but if you use them right, they're amazing. Mm-hmm. Because suddenly you can hear everything really clearly and really well, but what you can't hear is any natural sound on the stage. So you hit your drum and it basically sounds like it's underneath a pillow, unless you've got it mixed right in your in-ears.
Right, okay.
So, we do all the sound here, everything. They've got this great guy, these digital mixing desks. They've done all the sound. Everything's really good. Our manager's excited. He's like, it's quite a lot of the labels coming in, and the people I wanted to come are coming to this.
So I'm
like,
this
is great. Cool. Yeah. Maybe this wasn't, you know, we're a bit uncomfortable about doing it. Maybe it's great. And we come on, the super expensive, amazing new digital mixing desk crashes in our first song. So, pretty much, do you remember what modems used to sound like?
Yeah.
Do you remember what? When you used to load like a computer game from a cassette.
Yeah.
We got that really loud in our ears. And then because they're molded, so we got these in-ears, they're molded to your ears. So they're essentially like really high-end earplugs blocking out all sound unless someone's feeding it to you. So we could hear nothing. No idea what each other was doing.
And you're still playing through it.
We're trying to play, looking at each other. Laura's taking cues off when I hit the snare. I guess that's where the beat is. Desperately thinking, we know this is an important thing and there's people here and, you know, like, shit. We kept fighting through thinking he's going to fix it. Nothing got fixed. And then we did, similar to the Munich thing, eventually we were like, fuck this. We were getting more and more angry. We tried one last song, third song. Always an unlucky three. I lost it first before Laura this time. I was like, fuck this. I picked up my hi-hats and I threw them into the audience. And then I started throwing all my kit and kicking it and throwing it into the face of your absolutely fully lost. I was so angry. I couldn't cope. Yeah. Laura kicked all over amps, smashed the guitar on the floor, and we walked off and we went backstage. And we're like, I'm not touching any of that shit. I don't care. It's all rental anyway. I'm not doing anything. We're going to a bar. So we got in a taxi and went to a bar, which is now closed, called the Mars Bar. You ever heard of that?
No.
It's a legendary old school New York punk bar.
Right.
Absolute dive. Like, there was no more of a dive than the Mars Bar.
Sticky floors.
So cheap. Yeah, disgusting. Yeah, yeah. You'd leave and go to a diner around the corner to use the toilet because you just would get every disease you could.
Wipe your feet on the way out.
We got there. So this is like only like 6 o'clock. We got there and did what I like to call power drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a call a bit later. And it turns out our tour manager, he's picked up all the stuff and his laptop got stolen from the dressing room. He then came outside and got embroiled in a fight with a tramp who tried to stab him. So the whole thing was this disaster. Meantime, we got so drunk. We then had a fight. Laura got a taxi back to the hotel.
Laura had a fight with each other.
We had a fight because we just were drunk and pissed off still and couldn't get past it. I woke up on the ground somewhere in Manhattan at some point, unable to move, but awake, right? Just like my muscles at work. Eventually, some kind person picked me up and took me to a diner and got me some coffee till I could get back. And the next day, we wrote a song, which is on our third record, called Je M'appelle, which is about getting lost, not knowing where you are, not being able to speak or move properly in New York. And if we hadn't had that experience, we wouldn't have written that song. No. But that is one of the most disastrous things. We did not get a record deal. We did not get a really cool hotshot radio guy who was going to get us all over college radio. And our manager actually walked out when I started throwing shit around, just walked out and didn't talk to us about a week.
He had his laptop, Nick. You're lucky, probably, because you're in the States. He got laptop and then got embroiled in a near stabbing with a tramp
outside.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a dark
Everything
night,
about
isn't
it was horrific.
Rough gig.
You literally woke up and couldn't move.
I woke up. I was somewhere near the bar, so I'd obviously been kicked out or like it had been closing time, and then I just had blacked out.
Yeah.
And then I just woke up. The chorus to that song is, "What the fuck am I doing here, lying on the floor?" It's quite a direct song.
Yeah.
That's what it says on the
tin. That's interpretation.
It's about. Interpretation.
About that night, we were just like so bummed out by everything. We just got absolutely smashed, ate nothing, ended up fighting each other because that's what you do when you're pissed off. Laura left. I don't know what I did. But I woke up and I couldn't move.
Fucking hell.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah,
that's your third record.
And that's the last. So that must have been just before we recorded our third album. Mm. So that would have been 2011, I reckon.
So that's, well,
we've
do you know
never,
what,
ever done a music industry conference since then.
But it was still some good material, I guess, to use.
That's
turn it into something positive
that's
somehow.
It. Find a positive in the mix.
Those ones, you got to take those moments and use them to your advantage, I guess.
Oh, fuck me.
So,
Would you play it? Because if you had those Sennheiser earphones in, you was probably already on to the next song. Laura's still playing
song. I can't describe it. It was like I'd gone into like another dimension and I didn't know what was, you know, space and time didn't exist anymore. And it was just this odd.
Yeah. It was so weird, man. I was just like, what is that? We're looking at each other like, what? Have you got that too? Like, what is that? We're trying to be impressive here and it's...
Technology's all right. I remember when I switched to tractor instead of using vinyl because right. I was like, oh, you know what? I don't have to cart records around.
Yeah,
blah,
it's
blah,
really
blah,
easy,
blah.
Right?
And then you have a fucking computer malfunction in front of a few hundred people, and it's not a nice.
That's
thing.
The thing.
My whole
it's
DJ not. Set
is on a USB.
Yeah.
There you go.
I just take nuts. A bag of my CD.
Yeah, you have to. It's backup.
Always.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
I just
yeah.
don't trust it.
Yeah, mate. It's rough. You get prickly hot sweat. You got like 200, 300 people staring at you. You're like, okay, right. Not so much fun, right?
All it takes is that one, oh, I've got to turn it off and on. And
yeah.
Yeah, done.
Exactly.
That's one thing we've never used backing track as a band, ever. Mm. And, well, apart from the fact that I think it's a bit of a lame move anyway, but you're also not. One of the things is that whatever happens, we can play. It's a guitar and a drum kit. You'll be all right.
Yeah.
If the amp goes down, I'll just play some stuff on the drums for a while till you get another one.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're going to always be okay with that.
Yeah. You know where you are. You can feel it. You can touch it. You can
it's
feel
physical.
It. You can hear
it's
it.
It's completely physical.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, look, before we get on to number one, like, what's happening at the moment? Obviously, you said there's something happening which you didn't want to say too much about, and that was another.
We finished the new record. It's done. And it's in the pipeline. We've got a single comes out in 2 weeks, actually, because we go to the state. I fly out on Friday. Laura's already there. And we've got a US tour for about 5 weeks.
Amazing.
So we've got a single coming out for that. Because after all that disaster that happened later on, we figured it out. We did get an American record deal and a manager.
Is La Poisson
Rouge? And we pulled it together.
Is that on your touring thing, La Poisson Rouge?
It's not, no. We're doing a different venue.
Shit Girlfriend?
Shit Girlfriend is Laura's side project,
yep.
of which there are a few.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she doesn't mess about. That's her and one of her friends just doing like a kind of punk fun time. I think their rule is it's only real life stories. All their songs are real life stories, or when they just met some dickhead guy who tried to pick them up in a bar or something. They're like, he's an idiot. Let's write a song about him in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
There's probably endless material on that.
Yeah, and their whole thing is like, obviously we've been doing this band a really long time, and you get to a point where you're very conscious of what you do. You try and evolve, you try different things,
mm-hmm.
and you have to push yourself to get out of your comfort zone. And it becomes a different beast after time. And I think what Laura wanted to do with her mate was think about nothing and it just be fun.
Yeah.
From the get-go, like, this is a fun time, let's just do this and
there's
just
no
go on impulse. And yeah. And it's like a really good counterpoint. Because we've just been making stuff now. We're going to have to take two people on the road with us to play it. Because we got to the point where we were like, we could do another record as a duo, but we're not as excited about it.
Sure.
And it's a bit of a lie if you're not excited to put it out.
Yeah,
be
of course.
Like, hey guys, we don't really like it that much.
Yeah,
but you
want to come out and go,
I'm so excited about this. And how to excite ourselves was, we're going to try a load of layers. We're going to try a synth all over everything. We're going to try drum machines. We're going to try putting bass and stuff. We're just going to forget about how we do it live, make a really cool record that's just different. And then work out the other stuff after.
Yeah.
Which we're going to
work
out. That
sounds like the way you've always done stuff anyway. Do you know what I mean?
You do have to please yourself to start with, or it's just not going to work. You've got to go off that artistic impulse
of
what you want to do.
On shaky foundations, otherwise.
Yeah, it's the only way. So yeah, we've got a new single comes out 2 weeks.
Wicked.
I think. 2 weeks, 1 week. No, next week, Friday next week.
What's the name of it? Because
it's called God Complex.
God Complex. What you've got, Stu.
Yeah.
Does happen. Okay, so should we hit the top spot, mate?
All right. Top one is when we played similar thing. It was a really big festival that we got. It's the opening night of Rock on Seine, which is in Paris. And the opening night of the festival, they only ever have three bands. So we were really lucky to get chosen as one of them. It was Rage Against the Machine, headlining.
That is
in
crazy.
The middle, it was Lost Prophets. Let's just leave that where it is.
Yeah. Okay.
And we opened. And it's 35,000 people. There's no other bands, so everybody's there. So you play outdoors to 35,000 people.
That's bananas.
In Paris.
Man. I bet you was kind of buzzing.
And like I said, we've got no backing tracks, just the guitar,
the
drum kit, and two vocals.
Surely you must have just thought, fucking hell, this is a bit FD walking out to
It was just one of those where I was like, if I die, I've just done that.
Yeah.
It was the call. We did get a sound check for that, and we did show up on time, and everything was fine. And we came out, and everyone was like, no, everyone will be here. And we were like, really? You sound check up until about an hour before you play.
Yeah.
And then they open the doors, and you go backstage,
yeah,
which I'll come to because that's part of the story. We come back out, and literally there's 35,000 people staring at you. And we were like, come on then, let's do it. Well, we were in a good kind of place at that point. Yeah. We'd had quite a run of good festivals. We were getting on really well. We were quite confident.
We came out. Yeah.
We smashed it. And we never played to that many people. And we were like, wow, we can actually do that. We can come out with no tricks, no light show, no extra people, nothing. Yeah. Two people, really simple rock and roll songs, really simple instruments. And we can get 35,000 people in a field to go nuts. It was one of the coolest days of my life. Awesome. Another one that we did where we brought out some family. Laura brought her family out. We come backstage after Rage Against the Machine take all this stuff with them on tour. Ping pong tables being one of them. They're really into ping pong. We come on stage, come back. Laura's dad skipped the last bit of our set because he's playing Tom Morello at ping pong backstage.
Oh,
right?
Shit.
Laura's family are Irish. So you've got this, like, he's the kind of guy that makes up stories all the time.
Yeah.
He's like an Irish raconteur. So he's probably spent his life since then in bars going, oh, I played ping pong against Tom Morello once. Except that one is completely true.
True, yeah, everyone's like,
he
lost. Pull the other one.
Yeah.
But so we do that, and we've been invited the next day to something we didn't really know what it was, but it's a demolition party. And we're like, okay, mm-hmm. While you're in Paris, our French label comes through this thing. So like, stay an extra day because we're going to take you to this demolition party tomorrow. What it is, there's a hotel in Paris. They're smashing it down because the designer's going to rebuild it. And part of the kind of publicity of it being redone by a designer called Philip Starkey, who I'd never...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Heard of, it turns out it's quite a big deal, is they get loads of people in, smash it up, and then 6 months later it's relaunched, and that's part of the little narrative they build out of it. So we're like, all right, cool, that sounds fun. We've just played possibly the greatest gig we'll ever play in our lives. Let's go to a party in Paris.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. So we go to this thing. It's off the hook. We're like completely out. Johnny Depp's there. Keith Richards is there. Everyone's there. It's mental. We show up like two little kids, like, are we allowed? And our label guy leads us in. You literally, so the Gossip were playing in one room. Black Lips were playing in a room. There's all these people that I didn't know who they were, but Laura's like, she's like on the front cover of every Vogue ever. Just like all of them. There's like a huge throng of people outside trying to get in. They can't get in. And we sort of saunter through like we're superstars thinking like, is this a joke? Like, are we allowed? And so we go in. Everyone's smashing up this hotel. It's a beautiful, really old school hotel. It's got like a, so it's in a square, so there's a courtyard in the middle, and then it goes, it's about 8 stories high. Everyone, they're pulling down chandeliers, people are graffitiing, smashing, throwing stuff out. That courtyard in the middle, everyone's, there's TVs coming through windows, down the middle. There's all these bits, and we're walking around, finding all these, and we're like, right, well, we need to find a room that we can smash up. And we got there quite late.
Yeah.
Everything is totaled. I mean, people are graffitiing, there's bands, there's art, performance stuff.
Was there,
it's just chaos.
You have to sign anything to say that you might get hurt in there?
Well, I'll come to that. No, we didn't, right. But it got out of hand. So we're going around and we're like, well, there's nowhere we can fight. There's one little section with a bouncer. This is hilarious. The bouncer is there at the demolition party to stop people going to smash that bit up because that's Keith Richards' bit.
So
and they want to film Keith Richards totaling a bit of it.
He's
shotgun, part of this thing.
Yeah, he's,
and we were not having that. There was free champagne everywhere. At this point, we were like, basically like two little adolescents out of our depth going, come on then.
See how far we can push it.
So we waited till the bouncer wasn't paying much attention. And we bust into the bit that is Keith Richards that had been preserved for him to smash up. Literally kicked the door down, got in and started totally in this room. Threw a TV out fucking window for real for the first time ever.
Yeah, the bouncer now you're in a rock group.
The bouncer comes to try and get us. He comes in and is like, what's going on? But in French. Laura's idea, right, is that we escape the bouncer by getting out the bathroom window. We're about 7 floors up. Swearing my life, we got out the window and did like in a movie when they walk along a ledge to the next room. Most dangerous thing I've probably ever done in my life. That we get out, walk along the ledge into the next room, get back in and leg it and go back downstairs. So we totaled Keith Richards,
ninjured,
specially preserved hotel room, and then nearly died, and then ran downstairs and went and watched The Gossip play somewhere.
High-fived each other and was just like...
Yeah.
Because you might have died... Did you at any point you was pinching yourself thinking, maybe we died about a day ago just before we did that at 35?
The whole sort of 48 hours just felt like pretend. It still does. When I think about it, I'm like, isn't it weird I took no pictures of that? Why didn't I take any pictures?
Yeah. But what year was
who
this?
Else was there to verify this? Like,
what year was that?
So that would be, sort of 2009.
Yeah, I guess it's not
that
as like now.
That is insane,
it was
isn't it?
The whole thing was just non-stop mental, start to finish. And we get back from that, and we're like, is this real? You know, is that real? Did we just play to all those people? Did we just go into it? We never met Johnny Depp, which we were both trying to do really desperately. Mm. We were like, did that really happen? We played to all those people. Then we went to this thing. Anyway, the party as well got so out of hand. People started torching stuff and they had to evacuate the whole building. So all the footage, this is the other thing. So they were supposed to film it to use it for this stuff. Was lost. It was ruined.
Well,
so
it is like smoke a dream. Damage, yeah.
The whole thing. Shit. They just had to get everyone out. And there's all these guys in tuxedos trying to take souvenirs because they thought it was a thing. So there's like, spills out onto the street. There's this wasted Frenchman in like a tux dragging half a chandelier. Trying to hail a taxi, like, trying to be like, I've got a piece of it to take with me. Like,
that sounds like something out of like a disaster movie.
It sounds like every house party in Basildon I've ever been to.
Yeah,
it's just like on
this
that smaller scale. Yeah.
Like sort of, I don't even know what era it is. The 100-year-old Parisian hotel that's got totaled.
A demolition party.
Yeah, apparently there is some fragment of like some footage. Laura found it once, but I mean we're not in it.
You probably
to prove it happened, and we didn't just
you didn't just dream it.
That's a
didn't just spend a week in a mushrooms inventing it.
Steve, that's definitely a number one, mate.
That's the number one.
When you started number five,
it's the coolest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, definitely.
Went and played Rage Against the Machine. Watched Laura's dad lose to Tom Morello at ping pong, and then went out to this
telly out of a window. Standard.
Actually did it.
There's a lot of boxes ticked there, aren't there?
Yeah. And
the thing is, the ledge thing that I think, because bear in mind, Laura. Right, is I'm usually the cocky, like, nah, be fine, usually ends up backfiring guy in the back.
Yeah.
Laura's a lot more cautious than me.
Sure.
She's the one in that environment who's like, we'll just get out there and go along the ledge. But
wow.
I was like,
that
is
fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Steve, that's been a great top five,
yeah,
mate.
Thanks, man. That's it's gonna take
it's definitely better than movies or cheeses, right?
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. I do like cheese a lot. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Same,
But I mean, your number five was just
mate,
started.
I am playing Walk Like an Egyptian at the club on Friday night, and I'm going to see what response it gets.
It's that's a great amazing. Song.
So, people wanting to find out all about the gigs, the single, the album, where's the best place to come find out?
The
mate?
Usual stuff. Website, which is the name. Or Instagram, Facebook, you know, it's pretty easy to find.
Easy to search.
Luckily, with our name, no one else has got anything resembling that name at all. So as soon as you Google it, it's easy to find us.
Well, we'll tag you in this when this comes out anyway. And
So
listeners, let Steve know what your thoughts are and if you've got any...
Have you had any crazy... Have you got anything that can...
Probably fucking not.
But tell us what your favourite one was out of Stevens anyway.
Yeah, that's the best way to deal with that one.
Like
yeah,
I say, you had to play about 1,000 shows to get to 5 that are that extreme.
Oh, but
there's
so many
just regular ones. But it's like, we've done so many, there's going to be some. Started texting Laura while she's in California right now. She was like, what about that one? I was like, oh my God, I haven't even remembered that one.
Amazing. Yeah, you've seemed to have some solid gold.
There's like
there,
another
mate.
10 offcuts, which are pretty good as well.
Wicked. Steve, thank you so much for coming down for
much
this.
Appreciate
thanks
it.
For having me. Really sorry, Laura's in the wrong country, or we could have done it together.
That's all good.
No problem
it's all
at all,
good.
Mate.
She
no
wants to come and talk about Brain Dead for five for an hour, then we'll do that. Cool. Steve,
nice
pleasure, mate. Cheers.
Lovely. Thank you. There you have it. That was Hardcore Listening episode blah, 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 blah.
And now you know that you're never going to have as wild a time
you know, until you do.
I suggest you all sit there now and have a long, hard look at your sad lives.
Sad lives.
Because he's lived his life, hasn't he?
Yeah. What are you doing when you're listening to that? Having a rustler?
Yeah, exactly. I've never had a rustler. Have you had a rustler?
I quite like them.
I've never actually had a rustler.
I used to have one when I was a kid, and then my mum had one in the freezer the other week. And I was like, Mum, you're not supposed to freeze these. So obviously that was my excuse for getting it out and immediately eating it. Delicious.
Out of 10, seriously.
For like a microwave snack or snacks across the board?
A lunch. A light lunch, a home light lunch.
It scores poorly as a lunch across the board.
Right, you've rolled in at 2 a.m. You're steaming. What's it mark out of 10?
You're getting close to an 8 or 9. If you got 2, it's definitely a 9. Anyway, that was with Blood Red Shoes. Folks, we'll catch you next week.
See ya. It's a drunken soiree in the Within. Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.